Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namaste Sarasvata Devi Gauravani Prasadane Nirvashya Shishmirvani Pastatade Shatarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudhi Prabhu Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam Kapha 10, Chapter 23, Verse 27. Prana Buddhi Mana Svatma Dara Patya Dhanadaya Yat Samparka Priya Asang Tata Ko Nu Apara Priya Pranaburi Mana Svatma Dada Pacha Dhanadaya Yat Samparka Priya Asang Tatako Nvapara Priya Prana Buddhi Manasvatma Dada Pacha Dhanadaya Samparka Priya Asang
Samparka Priya Asang
Tatako Nvapara Priya Prana, one's vital force. Buddhi, intelligence. Mana, mind. Sva, relatives. Atma, body. Dara, wife, Apatya, children, Dana, wealth, Adeha, and so forth, Yat, with which, Samparkat, because of contact, Priya, dear, Asan, have become, Tata, then that. Ka, what? Nu, indeed. Apara, other. Priya, dear object. Translation, it is only by contact with the self that one's vital breath, intelligence, mind, friends, body, wife, children, wealth, and so on are dear. Therefore, what object can possibly be more dear than one's own self? Purport, the word yatsamparakat in this verse refers to contact with the individual self and ultimately with the Supreme Self, the Lord, who is the origin of the individual living being. By developing Krishna consciousness, one automatically becomes self-realized, and thus one's vital strength, intelligence, mind, relatives, body, family, and wealth all become enhanced and brilliant by the simple influence of Krishna consciousness. This happens because Krishna consciousness is the optimum, efficient conjunction of the individual self who is pure consciousness with the Supreme Self and Supreme Consciousness, Krishna. Also, you should thus return to the sacrificial arena because your husbands, the learned brahmanas, are householders and need your assistance to finish their respective sacrifices. Verse 27, it is only by contact with the self that one's vital breath, intelligence, mind, friends, body, wife, children, wealth, and so on are dear. Therefore, what object can possibly be more dear than one's own self? So this is Krishna speaking to the wives of the Brahmanas. And as we know, the Brahmanas' wives were qualified with attraction for Krishna. And this attraction was more than what their husbands had. Their husbands were involved in sacrifices, etc. But the wives were actually interested in serving Krishna. And in spite of the duties they had to their husbands of serving their husbands and bringing things for the sacrifice, they tried to fulfill the desires of Krishna and Balaram and give offerings to them. Which is, of course, against the regular varnashramic system of disobeying your husband, etc. Yeah, of course, we understand that they actually are superior to their husbands because they had attraction for Krishna rather than regular duty to the varnashram system and to karma. So the women approached Krishna with their offerings, and then Krishna spoke to them. And as we see, Krishna was a little bit discouraging to them, and he told them, go back and do your duties as householders. And then, of course, the wives reply after that in some disappointment. So this particular verse is there to convince the wives of the Brahmanas to act in their own self-interest. So here he is saying that actually the self is very, very important, and everything else is important because it's related to the self. And if it's not beneficial for the self, then it's of no significance. So therefore, the life air and the intelligence and the mind and relatives and body and wife and children and wealth, whatever we can think of in this world which people hold dear, is actually dear because it's related to the self. And this, of course, argument could be used for many, many purposes. But Krishna here is using that argument to say, therefore, that the self is the most dear thing and everything else is very wonderful because it's related to the self. And therefore we have to take care of the self and look after the self's interests. So it is in your interest to serve your husbands, so therefore you go back for your husbands. That's the type of argument he's giving. So this is somewhat similar to the discouragement that Krishna gives to the gopis when he plays his flute and then all the gopis rush out of their houses in the nighttime and they go to Krishna, abandoning their children and their wives, or their husbands, and whatever duties they have in the house, their parents if they're unmarried. And they go to Krishna, and then they see Krishna there. And then Krishna says, well, what are you doing here? I think it's not good that a brahmachari like me associate with women in the middle of the night in the forest. That's going to give you a very bad name. So you better go home. And if you think you're picking flowers and it's very dangerous because the tigers and the wild animals are out here, so you better go home. And so he discourages them, and of course they don't say anything, but they sit there looking at him. And eventually, after some time, then he accepts them. And discourages them at first. That, of course, that type of discouragement is there, not because Krishna really feels like that, but more or less part of his pastimes of seeing their attraction. And even though he discourages them, they do not give up their love for Krishna. And they simply wait for him. And they keep waiting there until he actually submits to their desires. So in that sense, there's not a refusal, but only some sort of ploy of Krishna to see their eagerness. Here, we see that the Krishna is discouraging them in one sense. And we can say, of course, why should Krishna discourage anybody in devotional service? Because he likes to see people advancing and serving him. And that is true. when the devotees approach the Lord, even if they have material desires, or Kamra Misra Bhakti, or Gyan Misra Bhakti, or Yoga Misra Bhakti, still, the Lord encourages these people. He does not reject them. And he says, all these types of devotees are very dear to me, in the Bhagavad Gita. So definitely he likes the devotees, and they are dearer than the Karmis and the Gyanis and the Yogis, who do very little bhakti. So those who are predominantly worshipping the Supreme Lord have a very special place in the Lord's heart, even if they're somewhat mixed. If they're pure, of course, then the Lord responds in that type of way also. In other words, much more strongly he responds than he would respond even to a mixed bhakti. So therefore, Krishna says concerning the Gyani, because he doesn't have any material desires, therefore, he is the most dear to me of all those. So in accordance to the type of surrender and the purity of devotion, the Lord becomes eager to serve the devotee. So the devotees are of different sorts, of course. So the Lord responds in those particular ways. So here the wives of the Brahmanas express very pure devotion. So why would the Lord discourage them? In the case of the gopis, they have pure love, and that discouragement is only a type of pastime of the Lord to see their eagerness and to test their steadiness in their love. In this case, what is the Lord doing? He's also discouraging them and saying, well, actually, you better go and help your husbands, because you have to be dutiful to your husbands. So that is a type of discouragement. We see in the next verses that the wives become very disappointed. They say, these are very cruel words you're speaking, telling us to go away, and you don't accept us. But there are, of course, several reasons for this. The wives of the Brahmins are not exactly like the gopis. Because, one, they're elder, and two, they are Brahmins, or Brahmin wives at least, whereas the gopis are cowherd people. And Krishna's a cowherd person. So it is a little bit peculiar that the wives of the Brahmanas are going to associate with Krishna, who is a gopa. It's a little bit of a clash of rasas, so to speak. Not exactly rasa, but we can say that it's some sort of discrepancy there in the mood. Krishna associates with the gopi. He does not even associate with Lakshmi, who is the wife of Narayan, because she is like queen. And Krishna's like a cowherd boy. So it's actually only Krishna with the cowherd people. They have this intimate relation from pastimes. So no one from Dwarka can enter into the pastimes of Krishna and Braja. Or no one from Vaikuntha can enter in. They have to have the right body, and the right dress, and the right attitude, and the right birth, so to speak, jati, the right caste. They have to be Vaishyas, cowherd people also. And then they can actually participate nicely in the pastimes. And we'll see even the in one place there's a description of the aborigine women who see the kumkum on the ground, spread on the grass, and they pick up and rub it on their breasts and everything like this. So it looks as if, okay, they're aspiring to be like gopis also. But they actually never attain that position in those bodies, because that also is a little bit different. They're not cowherd people also. So in this way, there's a little bit of a high qualification. One has to be of the same group of cowherd people as Krishna in order to participate in these particular leelas in Vrindavan. Of course, we may ask, well, then what about even we see the trees and the river and everything and the rocks? They seem to melt in love when Krishna plays his flute in the middle of the night or something. They all melt. Along with the gopis melting, all the trees and the rocks and the river, they all get excited, seem to melt in Madhurya Rasa also. And that they're very different. And the deer also. The does, the female deer, when they hear the flute and they see Krishna, their eyes become big and they approach Krishna as if they're in love with Krishna. But Acharyas explain that actually this is a little bit of an exaggeration, because they're not on the same level. And that cannot be real Madhurya Rasa, because they don't have the proper bodies for that. So more or less it's unsuitable, a yogya. It is not a suitable rasa. And when the descriptions are given, it is more or less in the eyes of the beholder rather than the actual position of those objects or deer or whatever. So just to show the great power of Krishna's love, then the descriptions are given. So in this case, we have the wives of the brahmanas, and they're trying to express their love for Krishna. But actually, it is not that cannot be also, because they are not cowherd women. So therefore, they cannot have such a relationship. So that is one of the reasons why Krishna discourages them at this point. And we see that it's not the same as the gopis, because eventually Krishna submits to the gopis. But he never submits to the Brahmin's wives, actually. Of course, he accepts their devotion. But not in the same way that he accepts a position with the gopis. So this is how he acts in this particular position. So it's a little bit different from the love of the gopis. Yeah. Krishna does respond to everyone, and he also praises the gopis, because, or not the gopis, the wives of the brahmanas, because they do have a genuine attraction for him, whereas their husbands did not. And they were willing to forego their husbands and the criticism of their husbands in order to serve Krishna. So that is a good quality, very, very good quality of devotion. This, of course, reaches its peak in the gopis. And Krishna explains later on, just before he has the Rasa Lila with the gopis, the gopis are a little bit angry with Krishna, because he says, why did you... he disappeared at one point, you know, in the middle of the forest, and they became all upset, and they looked for Krishna, and they couldn't find him. And then they found Radha lying on the ground. She was all crying and lamenting. They all began to look for Krishna, and they couldn't find him in the forest. And they all gave up in this great disappointment. And they went down to the bank of the Jamuna and began chanting. And then suddenly Krishna appeared. And then they became happy again. But then they were a little bit angry. Why he has to do this all the time, discourage us in so many ways? And if they have that type of feeling, a little bit of dissatisfaction, why is Krishna like this? Then he cannot actually begin the joyful Rasa-lila. So to get rid of that sentiment, then he explains to them that actually I can never repay your devotion. You are the highest devotees. Generally, if the devotee surrenders to me, then I will respond in exactly the same way. And to the extent that they surrender to me, I will surrender to them. But with you, I cannot do that. Why? Because in surrendering to me, you must give up so much. You have to reject your families. And your mothers and your fathers and your mothers-in-laws and fathers-in-laws, and if you're married, your husbands and your children. And you must bear the criticism of all the society and rejection of the society. And the gopis were saying, well, it doesn't matter. We will simply live in the forest. We don't care about any of this, but you must accept us. And so Krishna said, so you have given up all of this for me. So I cannot even do that. I don't give up my father. I don't give up my mother. I don't give up anybody. You give up everybody. And I cannot do that. So you are superior to me. And I can never repay you for that. So in this way, with the gopis, Krishna cannot even respond in the appropriate way. And therefore he says, you are the highest of all types of devotees. But in general, of course, Krishna does respond in according to the type of surrender of the devotee. So if a devotee surrenders somewhat, Krishna also surrenders somewhat. If they surrender 100%, Krishna surrenders 100% to them. Now, that's the general principle. But he expresses with the gopis, I cannot surrender to the extent that you have surrendered. So my surrender to you is never equal to your surrender to me. So you are the most wonderful of devotees. And just to show the strength of that love, I've separated myself from you. And even you're separated from me, and even you're disappointed, you do not waver in your love. That love does not decrease at any moment. So just to show the world the steadiness of your love and the intensity it reaches in separation from me without decreasing at any point. I have done this. So therefore, in other words, it was a glorification of the gopis. The pastime of separating himself was only to glorify the gopis and show the greatness of their love to the whole world. So then the gopis couldn't say anything. They couldn't criticize Krishna anymore. They were satisfied with his explanation, and therefore they all had Rasa-lila together. So, of course, in that way, Krishna was able to pacify them, and whatever he had done as part of his pastimes or lila in separation, it came to a proper conclusion, and they were all very, very satisfied with Krishna's devotion. They understood that he is not a cheater, he's not cruel, he's not deceptive, whatever. He's a perfect a person. So here also, though Krishna seems to reject them somewhat, and then they reply, "Oh, these are cruel words you're speaking. You're rejecting us and telling us to go back to our husbands, all this." Still, we should not think that in any way Krishna is not responding to the love of those particular persons. But within the pastimes of Krishna, there are certain norms they follow. So therefore, according to the particular rasas, they can only have certain types of relationships, and they have to respond within those boundaries. So therefore, he cannot respond in the same way to the wives of the brahmanas as he responds to the gopis. So generally, in sadhana, the devotees, as they advance, then they develop a certain relationship with the Lord, and in response to that relationship, then their spiritual body develops in that particular way. So there's no contradiction between their body, spiritual body, and the relationship they have with the Lord. So if you develop a relationship of friendship with the Lord, with Krishna, that is, then you worship Krishna in that mood, and you begin to develop the body of a gopa who is of equal age or slightly older or slightly younger than Krishna. And one naturally assumes that position in the spiritual world. And similarly, if one has a mudriya relationship with Krishna, then one develops the body of a gopi. And if one has vatsalya rasa, then one develops the body of a elder gopa or gopi in the spiritual world. Or if one is a dasa or a servant in the spirit, with worshipping Krishna and Vrindavan, then one will become a servant of Krishna and Vrindavan also. So in this way, the according to your relationship, gradually that spiritual body begins to manifest for the devotee. That's with Krishna, of course. And if you worship Vishnu, then you will develop a Vishnu Dutta body with four arms instead. Or if you worship Krishna and Dvarka, then you get a particular body there, like a servant in Dvarka, or a member of the Yadu dynasty, etc. So the bodies of the devotees manifest according to the relationship. And in the spiritual world, it's all like that. So we don't have inappropriate bodies to express relations. Right? The ideal bodies manifest for the various relationships with the Supreme Lord. Why? Because in this way, there is no restriction in the relationship. These are the ideal forms for establishing those particular relationships. One has to be elder, quite old, like a parent, in order to have vatsalya rasa. One cannot be younger than Krishna and have vatsalya rasa. And if the people are equal age, then this is ideal for friendship rasa. If they're both cowherd people. And if one is a male, one female, then we have madhurya rasa. So in this way, the forms are developed. And the form, of course, has to be a gopa. It cannot be somebody else in Vrindavan. And in Dwarka, then we have kshatriyas. Everyone's a kshatriya there, in general. Of course, we have a few brahmins, like Sudama Brahmana, etc. But in general, the people there are kshatriya. So in this way, Krishna responds to the devotees who are worshipping him in this material world, and according to their particular type of devotion, then the Lord responds and he encourages them to develop their particular suitable body to perfect the relationship with him. So all of this develops very, very naturally. Okay, any questions?
I don't quite understand why, when it says in that verse, why that object can be known, one can be known more passed outside. What object can be more
dear than the self?
Dear than myself, I don't understand why.
Oh, well, we have objects of this world, and we may say, oh, this is a very nice object. Yeah? But it's nice only because it relates to you, is it not? If it relates to somebody else, we're not going to say it's so nice. Well, it gives us a good experience. we get pleasure from it, then it is good for us. If it gives pleasure to someone else, it may or may not be good, we don't know. But if that's how we judge objects in this world, good or bad is in terms of ourself, ultimately. Huh? And, of course, there's long-term benefit and short-term benefit. So we have the, sattva-gun pleasure is long-term pleasure, and tamagun and rajagun are short-term pleasure. Or, of course, tamagun not even pleasure at all, suffering all the way through. But rajagun, we get some pleasure in the beginning and then later on turns into suffering. But it's all in relation to one's own experiences. I get pleasure there, and then we think this is nice. Someone tamagun, they can't figure out what is nice or not nice. They just simply suffer for whatever they do. But in goodness, then, yes, we also get pleasure, but we think of the long-term pleasure. The short-term, it may be difficult for us. Tapasya may be there. But long-term, we say, oh, this is good, nice for us. So we're thinking in terms of our own benefit, and then we think good or bad. Beneficial or not beneficial. So then it is in terms of what? It's in terms of you. And, of course, you can think, I'm my body. But then, of course, the body is only your possession. And you can think, I am the body, but actually you're not the body. The body belongs to you. And who are you? So that is the self, beyond the body. And then somebody says, well, the mind is the self or whatever. We can go that way, you and your mind. It's my mind, it's not me. So somebody possesses the mind also. So ultimately that is the you, and you are the experiencer. And therefore you say this is good or this is bad or whatever. So you are getting the pleasure, so to speak. So all of these things are dear to you because they relate to you only. And they're valuable for you and you want to have these things. So ultimately, these things are dear to you. But then what is the dearmost is the self. That is the dearmost thing. The self is that upon which all these other things become dear. So therefore it is the dearest. So in this way we always are looking after the benefit of the self. So the self is the dearest of all these things. Even though we may say that other things are dear, it's only in relation to the self. So why? Because the self is the dearest. We want to take care of ourselves. So therefore this is the prime object of attachment, so to speak. And it is inherent also, because we know the ultimately self is Atma. Atma is eternal, and Atma has an eternal identity. The I, or the ego, resides in the self. Not the false ego, but the actual ego. The I, sense of I-ness, aham, resides in the self, in consciousness. In other words, consciousness exists because we have a sense of I. I am conscious.
This is when we had seen sometimes that Krishna makes allowances for devotees who don't have a particular body to engage in particular service for him. So why does he make allowances? Like, for instance, there's the story of Lord Shiva who took on the form of a gopi so he could engage in the rasa dance. And also, Lord Krishna arranged for Uddhava to come to Vrindavan to see the love and devotion that Vaishnavas had for Krishna. So he could was a Buddha who came to Vrindavan, who, in order to witness the loving dealings that the branch process had for Krishna.
Yeah.
And explain, I think he did Krishna Ranjit, so the Buddha who could develop further his understanding of love for Krishna.
Yeah, but not that he one place he expresses, and I would also like to be like that, but then the Acharyas express, not that he desired to have Madhurya Rasa, but the intensity of their love in his particular relationship, he would like that same intensity in his Rasa, which was, I guess, Dasya. So it's not that he switched Rasas, but he went back to Mathura, and then he announced that the Brajavasis have more devotion than we have. All of them, whatever rasa it is, they have more devotion than us because I have witnessed this. So that was his function to announce that. And of course, to praise the gopis as having, of all the Brajavasis, the gopis have the most intense stuff. So they are the supreme devotees in the whole universe and the whole spiritual world. So in order to glorify the gopis again, he did this. So Krishna sent him. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's not in the Bhagavatam. I don't know exactly where that comes from. It's a story told, of course. But I think the idea there is to show that if you want to engage in the Rasa Lila, then you have to have that suitable form. Because even Lakshmi could not get in. That's what Krishna said. That Lakshmi cannot enter the Rasa Lila because her form is not the gopi form. So that anyone that wants to enter has to have the form of a gopi. And I think also then there's the Bhaktivinoda says the Brahma Gayatri takes the form of the Kam Gayatri, and in the form of the Kam Gayatri, then she can participate in the Rasa Lila also. But whether it's a factual thing that Shiva actually transformed, I don't know. Because then, is that his form or not his form? You know, it's kind of a, that he has an eternal form anyway, so then how can he transform into that? I don't know.
When you're talking about Buddha, you said that Buddha took Buddha's grass in Vrindavan because he wanted to get trampled by the gopis.
He says that, or he expresses that idea, or what?
I don't know, but he says when you go like to Vrindavan, he talks
about. Oh, I
don't
know.
Have you given up his original?
As far as I know, not, because in the Nectar of Devotion there it explains Uddhava as one of the Nityasiddha devotees. So Nityasiddhas never give up their form. And he's a prime example, you know, a very elevated devotee in relation to Krishna and being a very high servant of the Lord, one of his Parishadas, his followers.
So
I suppose so, in that sense, yeah. So they'll never change their particular position. It's like Yasoda's never going to change her position.
Why is it the Brahmins who were caught up in Karmakanda and Van Ashram in these things, what made them suddenly transform into realizing that they made a mistake and not offering the prasada to Krishna because their wives devotees,
in this particular case?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I suppose we could say it's the mercy of Krishna and presence of Krishna himself that, and probably the example of their wives, they became a little bit perceptive that their wives were on a higher level, and then they regretted that. But of course, even when they regretted it, their level was not the same. They're not on the same level. They just realize their mistake and they can become a Prashantarasa or something like that. But they were not actually on the same level as their wives. It's a good association, mercy of Krishna and whatever, they advance. Because they were not demons in the normal sense of the term. And so by association with Krishna, then they get advancement.
Maharaj,
can you
explain the form of
Buddha
to advance?
Well, we say that, you know, Vishnu is with Lakshmi, but actually they're expansions of Krishna and Radha. Radha is the first energy of the Lord, flooding Shakti embodiment, and then in Vaikuntha, she takes the form of Lakshmi. So we can say, anyway, Lakshmi's already there in the form of Radha. this is the opposite way, actually. Once she's in the form of Lakshmi, it's a lower form, we can say, once that's lower. So, but expansion form. So that actually she is enjoying as Radha or as any of the Gopi expansions. And they're more or less the same plot in Nishapti. But according to, you know, Dhamma and Leela, you can have the other form and switch, you know, into the Raja Leela from the Vaikuntha Leela. You can't do that, so therefore one has to have the other form.
Personalities like Brahmavadis or certain personalists who are very pure in their spiritual practice have a goal in mind and maybe one of Krishna's energies, not his personal feature. Do they have an awareness of some form developing through that practice?
Oh, well, those who are not Mayavadis, they don't reject the form of the Lord, those Brahmavadis get the mercy of the Lord, because they don't reject the Lord and they worship Him to some extent, and they can get mukti, yeah? And they can even advance beyond that by good association and mercy of the Lord and the devotees. They can go to higher positions. So the Kumaras, for instance, are Brahmavadis, but they get the mercy of the Lord and they develop Shantarasa, which is slightly higher than that, because the rasa means there is a relationship, whereas the Brahmagan, there's no real relationship. Huh? So when they get to Shantarasa, then they recognize the Lord and they develop ecstatic symptoms, etc. But of course, that's not so good as Dasya and the higher rasas, because the service is bitten, nil kind of thing. But they recognize the Lord at least, and they appreciate Him, and they develop some symptoms of Ananda. Huh? So the those in Shantarasa generally, by the mercy of the devotees, they can proceed a little bit upwards from that. An example of that is Sukadeva Goswami. I said that he was in Shantarasa, or he actually was a Brahmavadi who was disgusted with the material world and didn't want to come out of the womb. And then he got the mercy of the Lord in the heart, so to speak. And this is given in the Nectar Devotion, showing mercy in the heart. He has mercy in the heart, and then he develops a very high rasa with Krishna. Well, Adar doesn't explain that in Nectar of Devotion. This is, of course, there's going to be Leela also, that he came out as a Brahmavadi or whatever, and this for Leela, and then by mercy of Krishna he goes further than that. It doesn't explain why, it doesn't give the history before that.
And
bodies belong to it, so yeah. Well, it says here in the purport also that all these things belong to the self and ultimately to the Supreme Lord. Now, if we go, because we're thinking of our own interests in the material world, then obviously it's all related to the self. And when we become Krishna conscious, of course, then the self or the Atma belongs to the Supreme Lord. So then that's a higher realization. We're talking about the material world. This is our sort of consciousness, so everything is dear because it's related to the self. So for a Krishna conscious person, of course, then everything is dear because it belongs to the Lord. And we also belong to the Lord. So we cease to be the center of interest at that point. Krishna becomes the center of interest. And everything is wonderful because it's related to Krishna. That's higher realization. I was talking simply of the consciousness as far as the material world is concerned.
Rajan, you talked previously about developing the spiritual body according to the rasas. But you mentioned, is that the first one, this last one,
to Yeah, for people doing sadhana. Yeah? So, of course, it goes into sadhana, takes two divisions, that is the Vaidhi Bhakti and then the Raghunuga. And the Raghunuga gives you a relationship with Krishna and Raja in the spiritual world. And if you continue in Vaidhi Bhakti, then generally end up in Vaikuntha or Dwarka or Aishwarya Galoka, depending on who you worship. If you worship Vishnu in Vaidhi Bhakti, you go to Vaikuntha. If you worship Dwarka Krishna in Vaidhi Bhakti, then you go to Dwarka. And if you worship Radha Krishna in Vaidhi Bhakti, if you go to Bhava and Prema in the same mood with that Aishwarya type of mood in Vaidhi Bhakti, then you go to Aishwarya Galoka, which looks very similar to Raja, but everybody realizes Krishna is God there. But it's like that because it's all gopis and gopis, etc. there. But the mood is a little restricted because of the understanding that Krishna is God. The other way, of course, is mercy of the Lord. And suddenly, without being too much sadhana, you just go to the spiritual world, which is rarer. Especially at the advanced stages. Yeah. So in the Nectar Devotion there, Rupa Goswami traces out that, you know, okay, we do sadhana bhakti and we go up so far, then you go to bhav bhakti. So the bhav bhakti more or less depends on the sadhana. Huh? So your bhav is derived from vaidhi sadhana or raghunuga sadhana. And then from that your prema derives from your bhava, which came from the vaidhi bhakti, or your bhava, which came from the raghunuga bhakti, like that. And then, of course, the exceptional case is kripa. But even the kripa usually will depend upon your sadhana, what type of sadhana you did, and then you maybe surpassed bhava and just went up to prema. And he also mentions there in later sections of the Nectar of Devotion that how does one develop? He says by samskara. How's the relationship develop, and how does one get to the position of a dasa or a sakya or a parent of the Supreme Lord? It is by very, very intense samskaras, these impressions, which are created birth after birth by worship in a certain mode. Yeah. And of course, mercy. What's that? Well, we could say, well, how one would develop that particular impression, and why one would go in that certain direction. We could say that is according to your innate tendency, so to speak. And that would develop according to that innate tendency, then yeah, you would worship in a certain direction and develop that. Okay.
Oh, it's coming out of that.